Serving Penance, written and narrated by Jocanda Sykes. Rating: explicit. Summary: at rock bottom after the war, Harry finds Severus Snape. But when they see each other for who they really are, they must learn to believe in hope if they have any chance of happiness. Prologue. 17th of September, 1999. Dear Mr. Snape, Re 17B, Old Dust Hill, Handsworth, Birmingham. This letter is a formal notice that the rent is increasing from £400 to £450 per month. This is effective from the 1st of October. Yours sincerely, Jeremy Biggins Pinch. 1st of February 2000. Dear applicant, we regret to inform you that your application for the post of contributing editor has been rejected. Please do not reapply in the future. We will keep your records on file indefinitely. Kind regards, Marjorie Stump, Editorial Officer, The Practical Potioneer. 12th of April 2001. Dear Professor Snape, I hope you've been well. I realise this is a bit out of the blue, and I'm sorry to bother you, but someone I know is in a tough situation and needs someone to make them a complex potion. As you're the best, I thought of you straight away. It's an urgent situation, so it'd be great if you could let me know either way, or recommend someone else if you're too busy. Thanks for your time. Harry Potter. 3 days until the full moon. Harry's perception sharpened into consciousness, and the world was blaring. His T-shirt was clinging to his chest, the chill of his sweat causing him to shiver. The floorboards dug into his shoulders and tailbone. His throat was like a cheese grater as the air painfully shifted through. A pale eye was squinting into his face. It squealed.
"You is back, sir."
Harry tried to relax through the knifing sensation caused by the bullfrog pitch of the elf's voice.
"Dobby," he slurred.
Nausea spread down from the roof of his mouth, and his stomach rolled.
"It is creature, sir."
Harry sealed his eyes against the jab of daylight.
"The young master is out of his mind," he continued in an undertone. "He is unwell indeed."
"I need Dobby," he whispered.
He didn't see the wringing of creature's wrinkled hands.
"Who is needing help, sir?"
In and out. In and out.
"I need to die," he breathed.
"You is needing help, Master Harry,"
creature repeated loudly. Blackness crept in from the outer limits of his vision. Help. He needed help.
"I need Professor Snape."
Creature nodded, his ears flapping, and Harry passed out. Almost 12 hours later, Harry was in an old Victorian bath with shining silver chimera feet. The water was blisteringly hot against his pinkened skin, and he stared unseeingly at the ugly tiles. Creature was relishing Harry's return to number 12 Grimold Place. Earlier that night, he could hear Creature whistling as he made him a very oily traditional English breakfast with extra sausages. Harry was now feeling somewhat alive, if a little dead inside. He couldn't recall what happened last night, or early this morning. He vowed again to find control in his life. Creature apparated into the bathroom and Harry screamed.
"Begging your pardon, sir."
Creature bowed down low to the ground, his nose nearly brushing the floor.
"Creature is pleased to serve Master Harry, but he is not giving him anything to do,"
he muttered to the floor.
"I'd, really prefer if you knocked," he said, a bit strangled,
wishing he had the cover of Bubble Bath but making do with his hands.
Of course, master. Creature has prepared treacle tart, has restocked the pantry and made up the master bedroom.
Creature sidled towards the bathroom door and muttered,
Creature will be helping Master Harry.
Right, thanks.
Harry sank lower into the water. Harry didn't see Creature for days. The full moon came and went. Somehow, steaming meals and fried breakfasts regularly appeared. Lying in bed, he couldn't bring himself to care that the laundry basket was overflowing, and he relished the isolation. On the eighth day, Creature knocked on Harry's bedroom door. He entered, bowed low to Harry, and puffed out his chest.
Creature has found Professor Snape, master.
Creature didn't appear to mind that Harry was bundled up in a blanket by the window, staring blankly out at the square in front of the house.
Hmm? Creature has found Professor Snape, sir, he replied loudly.
Why? Did I ask you to?
He said, bewildered.
Yes, sir. Last week, sir.
Oh, I see. In that case, thank you.
The headmaster lives at 17B Old Dust Hill in Muggle, Birmingham.
Really?
Okay. Harry engaged his brain for the first time in a while.
Listen, could you do me a favour?
Anything, Master Harry, he said, nodding.
Harry was more than a little uncomfortable at this.
If you'd like to, I wonder if you could go to Diagon Alley and buy me an owl, food in a cage. Not a white one, maybe black. And definitely friendly. Ask for one that's been there a long time. Help yourself to the galleons in the drawing room. I'd go myself, but I'm not well enough.
Creature will buy master an owl.
He bowed low to the floor.
Perhaps an owl will make Master Harry happy.
He said in an undertone and disappeared with a crack. Harry sagged back against the window. Perhaps, he doubted it. Returning in what seemed like minutes later, Creature appeared with an owl in a cage. Somnus, a handsome black-banded owl, 14 inches tall, had been waiting for a home for several years as he was old and missing a talon on his right foot. Harry loved him. Stroking the black and white feathers with the back of a finger, he admired his new familiar. He's perfect, Creature. Thank you for helping. Somnus cooed back, and Creature bowed and left them. Harry had become more proficient at wandless magic out of pure laziness, or, to be generous, a strength of will not to move. With quill, ink and parchment summoned, he tried to write a letter to Snape. His head was a swamp of thoughts, and he struggled to string meaningful phrases together. He began, Dear Professor Snape, how are you? I hope you've been well. An indeterminate time had passed, in which tiny triangular sandwiches had materialised atop the writing desk in the corner. True to his name, Somnus was even more nocturnal than normal owls, although he seemed moderately eager to post a letter from Harry. This letter is for Severus Snape. I respect him very much. Be kind to him, but don't hang around. People aren't used to seeing owls. Somnus nuzzled Harry's cheek and lifted off through the open window into the darkening evening. Chapter 1. 11 days until the full moon. Leaping back after stepping into the road, Harry's heart hurtled out of his chest. The cars drove on the wrong side of the road back in Spain. Staring at the scrap of parchment in his hand, Harry frowned. Old Dust Hill was a street of red brick buildings. Flat 17B sat above a boarded-up Chinese takeaway. A depressed pigeon perched atop a wheelie bin, eyeing a skinny, sleeping cat. Rubbish was strewn across a neighbouring garden. A stereo thudded nearby. A car alarm wailed in the distance. The midday sun struggled to glimpse through the clouds, and Harry shivered in his coat. For the first time in history, he felt a twinge of worry for Snape. It had been 2 weeks since his first letter had gone unanswered, and now he found himself loitering outside his private home. He hoped Snape wouldn't hex him on sight. All the same, he wasn't convinced Creature had given him the correct address. Harry just couldn't imagine Snape living here. He rang the doorbell. Paint peeled off the door. There was no peephole. He was too tired to feel nervous at the thump of approaching footsteps. He was too dead inside to work up any anxiety over facing his former potions professor for the first time since he had left him dying on the floor of the Shrieking Shack almost 3 years ago. Snape answered the door. They observed each other tiredly. Snape looked awful.
Potter? What?
Snape squinted at him through bloodshot eyes. Snape wore an overlarge dressing gown that drowned his gaunt frame. His cheekbones jutted out, and he had dark circles under his eyes. He seemed paler than Harry remembered. His hair was, if possible, even greasier than it had been before, and hung around his face in long curtains. Harry felt certain he'd never seen him with stubble before. He looked as though he could do with a long holiday in the sun and months of Hogwarts cooking.
I need your help. I wrote you a letter. Can I come in?
Harry, desperation fueling his boldness, nudged the door open wider and Snape permitted him to enter. Perhaps it was shock at finding another wizard in Handsworth. Walking up the stairs, they entered a cramped room. More library than living space. It had a bundle of blankets on the sofa that hinted that it doubled as a sleeping area. Harry perched on the end of the sofa and pretended not to notice the empty bottle of wine by his foot.
Did you get my letter?
An electric fireplace stood where he would expect a wizarding one, and a wireless sat on the mantelpiece. Many unopened Muggle envelopes lay atop it. The stuffy room would clearly benefit from some fresh air. He wondered if Snape kept an owl. Snape jerked his head as if dislodging a fly.
I might have done. What do you want?
He looked both flummoxed and dazed. It dawned on Harry that perhaps he'd woken him up. He went to fill up a kettle in the tiny kitchenette. Harry performed a discreet warming charm and spotted him massaging his temples and frowning at the kitchen cupboard. Harry grew more alarmed by the minute. He cleared his throat.
Someone I know needs your help.
Judging by Snape's living situation, he inflated the price.
I've been quoted 80 galleons for the Wolfsbane potion, and I wondered if you would match it. I trust your brewing and discretion. It's for a friend. They're very private about their condition and want the highest quality potion they can get.
Snape spoke into a jar of instant coffee.
Do I look as though I have a private laboratory at my disposal? Get out.
This conversation was not going the way Harry had hoped.
What? Wait, sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. I can get you access to a fully stocked and equipped lab. All the things you need.
All the things I need, Snape muttered.
He watched the kettle on the hob and said nothing. Harry hoped he wasn't making coffee for both of them. It would be almost as awkward as sitting with Cho in Madame Puddiford's. To his relief, Snape got out a solitary chipped mug and sugar bowl as the kettle whistled.
Lycanthropy is rare. They must be a good friend of yours indeed for you to aid them in such a manner.
Harry was too tired to be patient.
I can't talk about who they are. Can you do it?
I need to know when they were turned. The intensity of the transformations increase for the initial 7 to 12 lunar cycles. I am not a nosy man, he sneered, stirring a considerable heap of sugar into his coffee.
Yes. They were changed near the end of the war. They've been affected for a few years.
Snape scrubbed his face with his palm.
80 galleons is more than fair. I need neither your pity nor philanthropy, Potter.
It's not pity. I just need your help, he replied. I think you're the only one that wouldn't pry, and who I can trust to make it.
Flattery will get you nowhere. Harry doubted that anyone had tried to flatter him before, perhaps not since he joined the Death Eaters all those years ago as a schoolboy. Harry was extraordinarily wealthy, more so after he inherited the Black Estate, and thought if anybody deserved charity right now, it was Snape. The payment will also include your discretion and reflects that it's hard to brew. I've moved back to London and can set up a laboratory at the house. He waved a careless hand. I could not care less where you live. I merely require the address, ingredients, and a suitable space. When is the full moon?
The 7th of May, he answered at once.
What is today's date? Harry hid the alarm in his voice.
It's Thursday, the 26th of April, sir.
Snape pinched the bridge of his nose. The werewolf drinks one dose each day before sundown for the 7 days prior to the full moon. I have not brewed this draught for 7 years. Send me the ingredients and instructions and address. I don't remember. I think it took 3 weeks to brew.
He sipped his coffee and turned around to face Harry, having finally come to his decision.
Providing the laboratory and ingredients are satisfactory, I will begin the first week after the full moon.
There's a new Fidelius charm in place. My current residence is number 12 Grimold Place, sir. I'll set the wards to let you in.
Leave me.
Thank you, sir, he said softly. He was only too happy to leave Snape to the cradling of his coffee.
The things I do for love, he sneered.
Oh, and Potter? He turned back around, hand on the doorknob.
Don't show up here again.
He felt a sense of relief at his tentative alliance with Professor Snape. Though the next transformation would once again be awful, he allowed a glint of optimism to light up the hopelessness within him. He hadn't dared let himself have any faith since he first began this descent into hell. There were no other brewers he could bear to ask, and Hermione and Ron were under an oath from discussing his problem. Apparating back to Grimold Place, not yet able to consider this horrid house home, he gently closed the door and tiptoed past the dark hangings covering the life-size portrait of Mrs. Black. Digging out the scrap of paper from his pocket, he went over the notes he'd started during his counselling session. There is much more to me than my condition. My condition is not a reflection of my self-worth. Shame and fear won't last forever. My condition does not have to be a wall to emotional intimacy. There are many people I can trust. Although penned in his own handwriting, the words were not true. He vanished the serpent-shaped candelabra on the rickety table in the hallway with a swish of his wand. Chapter 2. That week he broke into Slug and Jiggers under the cover of night and his invisibility cloak, leaving a heap of gold galleons for ingredients and all kinds of tools and implements. He crept around the shop with no idea what to get. He chose one of everything. Harry doubted Snape would return an owl asking for advice. He still had his old school pewter cauldron and a set of brass scales, and place these in the new laboratory too. With the replenishment of the laboratory supplies, Harry felt driven to start home improvements. He hadn't had the energy to make himself care before now, but the prospect of Snape coming to visit reminded him about getting to work. He tried to practice his switching spells on the doorknobs in the shape of snake heads before giving up after he set one on fire. This encouraged him to gain considerable satisfaction from burning and vanishing the ashes of virtually all the portraits. He kept a couple of the polite ones, Phineas Nigellus, as he was part of a Hogwarts pair and might be friends with Snape, and a landscape scene of thestrals galloping along a beach at dusk. "How courteous of you to permit me reprieve," drawled Phineas, "after all we have been through together."
"Yeah, yeah," Harry grumbled. "How's Hogwarts?"
"Your tone displeases me."
Phineas examined his gloves.
"Hogwarts is ever-changing, yet the same. Professor Dumbledore has been inquiring after you.
Good day to you. Wait. He vanished completely, leaving behind nothing but a murky backdrop. Harry thought this morning was as good a time as any to move him from the bedroom he once shared with Ron. He decided on the basement kitchen, in case Snape wanted to chat with him. 26 days until the full moon. The next time he visited Snape, he owled ahead. He decided it would be wise to ask him to draw a diagram of how he'd prefer the lab set up, or give a date to come over and discuss. There was no reply, but he hoped that Snape would not be taken by surprise. At the very least, he assumed that he was now opening his owl post. As he rang the bell, the door opened at his touch, and he went on upstairs. Snape wore patched-up smart trousers and a shirt that was too big for him, but looked cleaner and more well-rested today.
"How may I assist you now, Potter?"
The kettle was singing, and he beckoned Harry in with a jerk of his head. Harry sat at a shaky table and observed as he made tea. "How have you been?" He noted the empty wine bottles had disappeared. He realised that Snape was barely opening the cupboards to prevent him from seeing a glimpse of their contents. Snape did not seem like himself. The sting had gone out of him. There was less life to him, less anger directed at Harry, and the bullying and wit that he'd come to associate with him were not there. How had so much changed in 3 years?
"I am well."
He plonked a mug of tea in front of Harry, who cradled it in his hands. It was just how he liked it. Snape joined him at the table and sighed.
"What's it to be this time, Mr. Potter?"
"I'd like a diagram of how to set up the lab."
"Leave everything where it is," he said, blowing on the tea. "I will do it myself."
He nodded and ploughed on. "I'd also like to pay you to brew general healing potions and dreamless sleep."
"You appear not to have understood the concept of an apothecary."
"The ones at the infirmary worked best because you brewed them." Harry knew he needed the money, but it wasn't a lie. He trusted his potions above everyone else's. After all, Snape hated Remus and still helped him all year. He appeared to accept this explanation and inclined his head.
"Fine. 20 galleons for both."
"Perfect. Thank you." They sipped their tea in silence, Harry itching to have a good look around but not wanting to appear rude. "Would you mind if I watched you brew? Would it put you off?" Snape stared hard at him.
"Your existence is more bearable when you are silent."
"So that's a yes? Won't say a word." He did a zipping motion across his lips. He thought the corner of Snape's lip quirked up, but dismissed it as a trick of the light. They both swallowed another gulp of tea.
"Why do they not seek the help of St. Mungo's?"
"They don't want the truth getting out. You know what the general wizarding public is like," he said darkly. Snape nodded non-committally. "Can I ask you something?"
"You just have."
He cleared his throat. "When word got out that Remus was a werewolf, was that because you hated him from when you were at school? And my dad and all that? Or was it because of his affliction?"
"That man was provided with wolfsbane free of charge for 7 days every month. Employed at a school full of hundreds of children entrusted to his care, he did not remember his last dose, and you and your little friends were nearly killed or turned into werewolves."
Snape smiled. "I confess I did not feel very sorry for him." Harry had not considered it that way. When put like that, it was actually really dangerous having Remus there as a professor. As much as it pained him to think negatively of him now that he'd passed away, it was unthinkable of Remus to forget he was a werewolf. After his visit with Snape, he didn't immediately return home. Finding his way to a shopping centre in Birmingham, Harry stocked up the house with new towels, bedspreads, pillows, a perfectly ordinary muggle teapot free of curses, and an ornament of a small perturbed hare that reminded him of Luna. As quiet as it was in the shopping centre on a Monday morning, he couldn't bear the crowds.
Perhaps the reason he preferred to be alone was because he had seemed disconnected from everybody since he was no longer human. It was as though he'd wandered in on a film set. An invisible barrier separated him from the rest of the world. He was, he had always been, a marked man. It was just that he expected, after fulfilling the prophecy, it would all be over, and he could be normal. And yet, sitting here on the bench outside the department store, with the terrible weight of who he was pulling at him, with the dread of his impending transformation so raw inside, he could not muster any great sense of fear. It was sunny, and the surrounding shoppers were full of laughing mothers with prams, and even though he felt as distant from them as if he belonged to a different species, it was still very hard to believe as he sat here that he was a danger to them all. The shops were shutting before he realised he was cold. He got up to find a private spot to apparate home, wiping his face on his sleeve as he went. On days when he wasn't busy making the wolfsbane, Harry hired Snape to brew the scraps of handwritten potion recipes he'd found in his Gringotts family vault. A week after the full moon, Snape swept into the kitchen to present him with a small flask he had brewed.
"Professor Snape, it is balm to my soul to see a face of kinship once again," Phineas said reverently, in his high, reedy voice.
Severus nodded. "Professor Black, we meet again."
"And so once again you are guardian of the youth."
Harry rolled his eyes.
"I'm not a youth." "Youth is no impediment to stupidity," began Phineas.
"Youth is no impediment to bravery," Snape cut in. A stunned silence followed.
"Thank you, sir." He held the flask out to Harry and said,
"There you are, Mr. Potter. I have finally descended to a new low. I am now a cosmetics potioner."
He accepted the flask and inspected the pale lilac solution. "I don't understand. What does it do?"
Snape looked at him quizzically. "You employed me to brew unknown potions, and you were unaware that your grandparents were cosmetic potioners."
"What?" he spluttered. "What do you mean?"
"You truly know nothing about your family."
Snape spun on his heels and swept into the laboratory, and Harry followed him. He watched him clean the brass scales and made a "go on" gesture with his hands. Snape sighed.
"It has fallen to me to educate you once again. Your grandparents, Fleamont and Euphemia Potter, created, patented and sold the Sleek Easy Hair Care Potions product line. That is why you are exceedingly prosperous and need not work."
He ignored the barb.
"Did it piss you off that I was so terrible at potions?"
"You did not apply yourself."
Snape returned the scales to the shelf and scourgified the cauldron. Harry supposed he was right. He swallowed down his discomfort with his undeniable wealth, unable to resist trying to learn whatever he could about his family.
"Can you tell me anything else about my family?
Do I look like I keep up with the news and views of cosmetic potioneering? Anyone not living under a rock is fully cognizant of their existence. Even your girlfriend probably owns a vial."
"I don't have a girlfriend," he said dismissively.
Realisation dawned that Snape had hours of stories about his mum, or even his dad. He was painfully aware that the sole person who knew anything about his parents' school days, who was still alive to tell the tale, didn't want to talk to him. He hoped that one day they might build up enough camaraderie to discuss it. He realised that would be a day long in coming.
"Thank you for telling me."
Snape nodded at Harry, who realised he had been dismissed. Returning to the kitchen, he sat down next to Creature, who was peeling carrots.
"Those who wear masks often reveal more truths than those with open faces," said Phineas.
Harry rolled his eyes. He couldn't get a word of sense out of that wizard. Since the pensive memories, Harry's heart had softened towards Severus. He found it much harder to be angry at a man who was once a little boy dressed in too large clothes, not unlike himself,
who likely hung out with his mum every day of the summer holidays, and who was just as lonely as he had been. A soft voice in the back of his mind said, "Slytherin will help you on the way to greatness, no doubt about that." Harry imagined how different his life could have been had he not met Draco in Madame Malkin's, had he not met him on the Hogwarts Express, and how Snape would have been his head of house. Shaking himself out of his reverie, which he was wont to do these days, he resolved to focus on the future. Whilst he was holed up recovering from his bite, and before Snape had woken up at St. Mungo's, he went to the bank and applied for an inventory and account summary of the Potter and Black accounts. The vast wealth astounded him. Of course, he theoretically knew that he was rich, but he hadn't been able to deny it when faced with the parchment and ink of his statements. After his afternoon counselling session, he met with two estate agencies. He couldn't work full-time and couldn't think of anything better to do. Over the next few days, he booked appointments to view houses in Bristol, Bath and Reading, and two flats on the outskirts of London. He hoped a lettings agency could manage properties on his behalf if he bought homes to let. With a touch of magic, he could even renovate and clean to a reasonable standard without being bored out of his mind. He would then have a part-time business to keep him occupied from dwelling on his fiasco of a life. He tried to stamp out the dream of having a family. Although he was no seer, he knew this was not in his future. Remus had been incredibly lucky to find someone as tolerant as Tonks. But who would tie himself to him, the freak who lived, photographed at every wizarding venue, and now medically untouchable? Dangerous, even. He was a monster. Worse, a famous monster. So far, Hermione and Ron had sworn an unbreakable vow not to tell anyone, and he had obliviated Malfoy. His first transformation took place at the manor. He repaired the house, laughed off the missing chunk of time a few days later, and blamed it on a dodgy batch of Ogden's old fire whiskey. Hating himself, he went travelling. The past 3 years were a blur of partying in Barcelona, Krakow, Ibiza, Amsterdam, Marbella. Sleeping with strangers, getting drunk daily, passing out on beaches. Feeling disappointed at every new day, before taking the International Portkey home to go to Hogsmeade for his transformations. He didn't know why he kept on returning to the shack. Perhaps it was penance for leaving Snape there to bleed to death, or to feel closer to Remus. He was aware he looked terrible, as though recuperating from a severe bout of flu. His sleep was broken by nightmares, and the dreamless sleep St. Mungo's had prescribed him was of inferior quality to what he'd drunk before at the hospital wing. He made a note to ask Snape to brew him another batch. He had to be wary about what he might end up accidentally divulging. Snape was too clever by half. He was astounded that only he and the Marauders had discovered Remus's secret in 7 years at school. He must keep his distance from him. Thankfully, he did not pay any attention to Harry's comings and goings. Chapter 3. Harry was not comfortable asking him face to face for a scar-fading solution, and so left a note in a pile of galleons in the laboratory. He preemptively copied instructions from one of the library books at Grimmauld Place and picked up the correct ingredients. Harry had taken to replenishing supplies under the cover of night. Looking around the lab, he wanted to tidy and clean after Snape finished for the day, but he invariably left it in pristine condition. Without Wolfsbane, he bit and scratched himself during his transformations, and basic healing spells in Dittany could only achieve so much. A normal wizard simply went to an apothecary and got what he needed, or even used owl order, but he was just so ashamed. It was so wrong that someone that served Hogwarts and the wizarding world for so long had so little to his name. He wasn't sure if he was being optimistic, but he thought Snape had filled out more and looked more well-rested. His hair was cut above his cheekbones, and he stood taller. He wore sweeping robes reminiscent of Harry's school days, and Harry hadn't seen the patched shirt and trousers since May. Although he must be nearing 40, he didn't look a day over 30. Something Harry still found difficult to get used to was the reality that wizards lived past 150 years old. Professor McGonagall, at nearly 100, was still far from retirement age. Harry took better care of his appearance, too. On days when he expected Snape's company, he showered and shaved. He kept his hair cut short and always put on fresh clothes. Even the mirrors had noticed. On an afternoon when he wasn't brewing Wolfsbane, Harry asked Snape to go with him to a house he had bought in Southampton. To his surprise, he said yes. Harry hoped to rent it out in a couple of months' time. Snape, though never the chatty type, appeared quieter than normal as they walked around the house. As he was a cash buyer, the sale had gone through quickly. "It's a bit of a fixer-upper, isn't it?" Harry said, screwing up his nose.
"Indeed."
Snape reached out a long finger to snap peeling paint off the kitchen wall. Harry peered out of the grubby window that overlooked the back garden. "Are there spells to get rid of the cigarette smell?"
"Undoubtedly.
A house such as this would occupy your elf for a period of time." "This is more to occupy me, though I'm hoping the magic I learn to upgrade this place will help improve Grimold Place too." Snape twisted a squeaky tap in the kitchen sink. No water came out.
"Reparo," he said, tapping it with his wand.
Water flowed out in fits and starts.
"Nice."
At Severus's face, he clarified. "Well, it's a good start. Gives me hope for the rest of the house."
"You could just hire Muggle contractors. Do they still have the yellow pages?"
Harry blinked. It was incongruous that Snape knew about the yellow pages.
"I suppose so, but where would the fun be in that?" he said, grinning.
There was no particular rush to rent it out as he didn't need the cash, but he felt idle doing nothing all day with no social life outside of Snape, Creature and Somnus. Hardly the paragon of a lively social schedule. Two of them weren't even human. But then neither was he supposed. On the day of the full moon, Harry awoke at 5:30, as abruptly and absolutely as if someone had yelled in his ear. For minutes, he remained stock still, as the prospect of tonight crowded every tiny particle of his brain. Then, unable to bear it, he leapt out of bed and put on his glasses. Night was coming, whether or not he was ready for it. There was no point in wallowing with his head under the blankets. He needed to get over it. He went down to the larder by the kitchen and started munching directly out of the box of cornflakes. The sun had not yet risen, but Creature was up and about. The fire burned, and he sat staring into its mesmerising flames. He wondered if Remus had suffered the same dread, or if this was something that he had become used to over the years. At least Remus had friends to run around with on the Hogwarts grounds. He pushed away the thought that he had completely cut out his friends. He tried not to remember Hogwarts, lest he miss it too much. Too much thinking about school and the days before the bite made him want to fly far, far away and go out drinking and dancing all night in the arms of strangers. It was merely the hope of the Wolfsbane that kept him from fleeing abroad once more. He considered applying more of the scar-fading solution, but at the moment it was utterly pointless as he would hurt himself again tonight. It worked well. The only scars that remained, aside from the Horcrux locket, lightning bolt, and I must not tell lies, were from the first few transformations, and even they had faded. A depressing day followed a wretched and painful night. He sheltered in his bedroom, speaking to Creature only to tell him to leave him alone. The remorse would come later. Snape had shown up, even though Harry was not expecting him. Apparently he had supplies to drop off in his lab, and then, without fully realising how, Harry found himself huddling around the teapot in the basement kitchen. He felt that he was a survivor of a profound disaster, and gripped the teacup so it wasn't obvious that his hands shook. "Didn't sleep well. Going to lie down. I'll, eat some breakfast later. Thanks for the tea." Phineas sidled out of his frame, and Snape raised an eyebrow.
"My pleasure."
29 days until the full moon. By the next day, Harry was surprisingly refreshed. The potions faded the bruises to yellow, muted the pain, and almost fully healed his wounds. Unusually, he was in the frame of mind for speaking to someone other than Creature, Phineas, or Somnus, even if that meant being outside. He considered going to visit Snape, who wasn't due at Grimmauld Place for at least a few days. Scowling at Harry's finger and foot tapping, Phineas tutted. "Do you reckon if I just showed up, Snape would want to hang out?" he asked Phineas.
"Professor Snape. And no, I do not expect he would."
Creature snapped his fingers, and a feather duster appeared. He started sweeping Phineas's face, who scrunched up his nose in revulsion.
"Can you feel it when someone dusts you?" "I am merely pigment, canvas, and magic. What do they instruct the children these days up at that school? How to ask foolish questions?"
The very second the hand on his new kitchen clock shifted from "you ought to go" to "you really need to leave," he resolved to speak to an actual human being. Seconds later, he was in the dodgy part of Birmingham. The mangy black cat stared gormlessly at Harry, this time from the wheelie bin. He spared a thought for the depressed pigeon. He rang the bell, and once again the door opened at his touch. He was not sure why Snape was permitting their uneasy truce, and suspected he must be desperate for the money. Pushing open the door at the top of the stairs, he bit back a gasp. Snape sat slouched in his chair at the rickety table, bloodshot eyes looking listlessly up at him, lank hair hiding most of his face. "May I come in?" Snape said nothing, so he came fully into the room. "Do you need me to nip home and get a hangover potion?" He offered him a shaky smile to prove that he wasn't judging him. He was not used to looking at his former teacher in such a state. Snape cleared his throat. "That will not be necessary." Closing his eyes, he curved his head around to crick his neck and sighed. "What have I achieved to merit the delight of your company today?" He winced. "Sorry for just dropping by. I should have howled first." Snape had no answer for this and simply raised his eyebrows. "Right, definitely should have howled first.
I wondered if you wanted to go out for dinner tonight?"
On second thought.
"Or tomorrow night?"
Snape gave him an inscrutable look, so he barreled on.
"I can pick you up tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Muggle London. My treat to say thank you for putting up with me," he said, giving a lopsided grin.
Snape swallowed. "That would be acceptable."
"Is there anything you don't like to eat?"
"No."
"All right then. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye."
He waved a little awkwardly before fleeing downstairs to reach the boundary of the anti-apparition jinx. It was only when he got home that he realised that perhaps Snape didn't have the luxury of turning down food. The next day, Harry got change into everything Muggle he owned. Jeans would remind Snape that he wasn't a school pupil and would not remind him of his dad. On second thought, he couldn't in a million years imagine Snape in jeans, so perhaps he'd better dress smartly. Eventually, he settled on a pair of black jeans, smart ankle boots an ex made him buy, and a soft round-necked blue jumper. He scowled at the mirror after it declared that the next being who clapped eyes on him would fall in love with him at first sight. His fading scars were not on show. Yet he looked tired and his hair refused to lie flat. Summoning his grandparents' hair potion, he eyed the lilac concoction uncertainly. He knew from the Mirror of Erised that his messy hair was hereditary, and the potions worked a miracle for Hermione at the Yule Ball. If it was a disaster, he could always rinse it off. "Here goes nothing," he told his reflection and the mirror. He dribbled a little onto his palms and smoothed it into his hair. He was frankly astonished to see his hair flat for the first time in living memory. The inappropriate leer from his mirror only dampened his mood somewhat. "One more sound and I'm silencing you." He'd spent an hour in an internet cafe reading the reviews on TripAdvisor and studying the exterior of restaurants on Google Street View.
He didn't want to piss off Snape with a poor restaurant choice. By 7:02, he was poised outside Snape's flat, focused on the dented gold watch with swirling stars encircling its face. He knew Snape would hate lateness. He was not composed at all when Snape flung open the door and asked him why he was loitering. Harry had scoped out the place earlier to confirm it wasn't too romantic or too dodgy. He thought Italian a safe bet, and all the cheese would be good for Snape. Grasping his forearm and concentrating on the destination, he glanced up at Snape looking down at him. His glittering eyes caught him off guard. He refocused on the restaurant and sidelong apparated them to the alley behind Bianchi's, and they went inside. "Hi, I booked a name for two under the name Rob Williams."
"Come right this way, gentlemen."
The waiter settled them down by the window, and Harry smiled nervously over the candle flickering between them. Snape sat upright in a crisp white shirt tucked into his smart trousers. Aside from dragonhide boots and the open collar that displayed Nagini's scars, he looked ready for a Muggle job interview.
"I apologise for yesterday. I'm sure you'll appreciate that May is not my best season," Severus started.
"No, not at all. It was rude to just show up. I don't really track the anniversaries, as that entire year was horrendous."
The rest of the meal was subdued, with Harry attempting to make small talk with Snape. He found out that Snape had been to Italy. He likes cheese. He enjoys four cheese pizza. He prefers risotto. He speaks rudimentary Italian. He didn't think there was room in the curriculum at Hogwarts for languages. He had never eaten seafood growing up, and avoided it at Hogwarts. He didn't like Rome. He hates tourist shops. He does not collect magnets for his fridge. He does, in fact, have a fridge. They had also learnt that the lady on the table across from them had a husband that was cheating on her, that she was thinking of remarrying her first husband, and she planned to get drunk and eat cheese every day for the rest of her life. They avoided speaking about the war, and Snape even smiled unconvincingly at one of Harry's jokes. Harry leaned in. "Look, if you're having a bad time, it won't offend me if you want to go," he lied. "I know I dragged you out and didn't really give you much of a choice in the matter," he said, laughing weakly. "I do not dislike your company, Mr. Potter. This has been a welcome diversion."
Snape was studying him, but Harry looked away because he had the peculiar feeling he was being X-rayed, and he wasn't sure how he felt about his not date with Severus at the moment. Harry began to blush, so grabbed a menu and peered at it. "I'm stuffed. I also kind of want the apple crumble and the gelato. If you order the crumble and I have the gelato, I'll trade your bite of crumble in exchange for some of my ice cream."
He folded and set down his menu. "Mr. Potter, we have a deal."
He reached over and shook Harry's hand, who beamed at him. Harry pretended he couldn't eat more than a quarter of his gelato and cajoled Snape into finishing it up. After learning that Snape's favourite dessert was crumble, the next time he was at the supermarket he bought flour, oats, Cornish vanilla ice cream, custard and cooking apples. He allowed Creature to help chop up the apples and cast preservation charms on the bags of ingredients. Severus exited the lab as Harry checked on the oven.
"Hey," Harry called. Snape came down into the kitchen. "I've made far too much crumble, and there's no point really baking just for one man and a house elf. Care to join?"
Snape eyed the pudding with uncertainty. It was steaming, and Harry dished up two helpings.
"See? Not poisoned," Harry said, grinning.
"Thank you," Severus said quietly. Severus slid into a kitchen chair. Harry was busying himself with vanilla ice cream, and Phineas popped on a monocle. "A crumble halved is a crumble shared and all that," Harry said, laughing. It delighted him to see happy crinkles appear around Severus's eyes.
Chapter 4. 17 days until the full moon.
Harry found a chess set in his parents' Gringotts vault and left Severus some gold to check it for curses. He deemed the set to be all clear and informed him they were created from precious stone. He felt a pang of sorrow at not seeing Ron for ages and wondered if he still played wizard's chess. He invited Severus to play a game with him in the sitting room after dinner, and it charmed him that the pieces had a Birmingham accent. Their advice flummoxed Snape. "No, I don't think you should lay me there. If I triumph over his pawn, the bishop can get his queen." "Don't fret. If I win, you can blame it on me having the upper hand in owning the advisory committee," said Harry. Snape snorted in reply. He liked the fact that Severus matched him well at chess, as he always assumed that people like Sev were excellent at everything. When Severus narrowly won, the winning pieces danced a joyous jig in unison. "This is a very, very good chess set," he said, leaning back against the armchair. Harry narrowed his eyes. "Are you just saying that because you won?" "Don't let your pieces hear that. You may not get through so easily next time. Is that not your style, relying on the skills of others?" It was a sign of how far they'd come that he appreciated Severus's teasing, rather than accepting them as an attack. It helped that Severus smirked at him, relaxed, with a cup of tea in hand. Looking at the board, he saw his own pieces had joined Severus and danced some kind of reel. "I don't think they mind too much." "Ah, the eightsome reel. Do you like to dance?" Severus answered him slowly, weighing each word on his tongue. "When you waltz with the devil doesn't change. The devil changes you." He stared into the fire, lost, their earlier humour forgotten. "I should replace those recollections with merrier ones." Harry wasn't clear how the conversation had taken this direction and pushed them further down the road. "I'm sorry I didn't give you back your memories and just left them in your office. I was a bit out of it. But it's really no excuse." Snape nodded. "I got them back. The school recognised me as headmaster still." Snape stood up abruptly and downed his tea. "You're leaving?" His eyes burned into Harry's. "I don't live here." "Good night, then." "Good night, Mr. Potter." Harry drifted off to sleep in front of the fire in the drawing room. When he woke up, he found Creature must have tucked a blanket around him. It was a bit odd. Relieved he had woken up alone, he was achingly hard. Perhaps it was too long since his last casual encounter abroad, as he was becoming increasingly aware of his ex-potions professor. He apparated up to the bathroom that adjoined his bedroom and stroked himself to completion, imagining dark, silky hair, long legs and deft fingers in place of his. Harry was reading Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them when Snape swept in the following morning.
"You added my name onto your vault."
He brandished the note Harry had left and stared at him as if something was seriously wrong with him, which there was. "Of course. There are some cool artefacts I'd like you to examine, and I trust you with my life." Harry shrugged. He refused to feel weird about it. He resolutely decided it was time for a pot of tea. Perfect. Snape said nothing and didn't leave.
"Look, I'm sorry if it's a bit weird, but I just don't have the energy anymore to..."
He waved a hand, struggling to think of an appropriate phrase.
"Anticipate people's feelings. I just do what I think is best. You can tell the Ministry to take your bills out of that vault. Honestly, I don't mind. It's only mine because people have died that I didn't really know. And if anyone deserves to be rich, it's you."
Snape's Adam's apple bobbed as he swallowed hard.
"I have never been wealthy before, but I have known the kindness of friends."
He took this to mean thank you.
"Cuppa?"
11 days until the full moon. As the kitchen was scarcely less gloomy than the hallway above, Harry strove to improve the cavernous room. The rough stone walls lent it the character of chilliness,
and most of the light came from the enormous fire at the end of the room. Harry had been up in the garden, attempting to put in gigantic windows he bought from B&Q that let in swathes of natural light. Thankfully, he talked Creature around into helping him, and between them they'd coaxed the window not to leak when it rained. By daylight, the shapes of heavy iron pots and pans dangling from the dark ceiling were no longer ominous. Creature had burnished them rose gold, and the sunny room was his current favourite spot to read. Accessing the garden had been no joke. A black ancestor had enchanted the rear of the drawing room to resemble an ugly wall. Harry asked Creature if he'd help put in a door, as he couldn't hire a muggle contractor without breaking the statute of secrecy. With nothing more than a snap of his fingers, Creature revealed a heavy door. It had no handle. Deciding not to try transfiguration, lest he set it alight the same way the doorknobs went, he found an excuse to borrow Snape. He told himself Snape ought to feel at home here, so it was appropriate to ask him for help. Severus smiled grimly and, with a twist of his wand, conjured a brass doorknob overlaid with a laurel wreath. "Show off," Harry muttered, as Snape swept back across the corridor to the laboratory. The yard was a veritable mini Forbidden Forest, and he entreated Creature to vanish as much as possible before they worked on installing the basement kitchen windows. With a pang, he recalled how Mrs. Weasley cooked meals for the order with the cauldron over the large fireplace. He vanished the oven after it tried to slam his hands inside, so ordered a new gas-powered one. The hallway lamps also used gas, and as inviting British gas around was a no-go, he persuaded Creature to use his elf hocus-pocus to get it going. Calling the light-bathed kitchen a job well done, he ventured out into the frantic bustle of Oxford Street to replace the china and the 15th century solid silver goblets. They were embossed with the black family crest, and Harry couldn't bear to look at them. He gave Creature, who understood with tears in his eyes when Harry explained that they made him upset, one of everything to keep in his den near the pantry. For some reason, he didn't mind being out in Muggle London. In immense Saturday crowds, with his hair lying flat over his scar, dressed in well-fitting blue jeans and a hoodie, he looked like any other young man. How little they knew. Once home, purchases tidied away, Harry reviewed the notes from his most recent counselling session. They went over black and white thinking and catastrophizing. Some people will be bothered by my condition, not everybody. Some opportunities will be lost to me, not all. My life will be harder, but it isn't over. Some people enjoy my company. I will not be forever alone. I would be kind to people with my condition, so I should be kind to myself. 4 days later, Snape came by in the late afternoon to give him the first dose. Blue mist rose faintly from the goblet. "This should be drunk directly. Sugar makes it ineffective. They require a goblet full for 7 days before the full moon." "Thank you. I'll have my elf bring them straight away."
"As you wish."
When Snape left, he drained the potion and contorted his face in disgust. The empty goblet was still smoking. He went into the pantry and called Creature. Harry discussed breakfast cereals with him quietly, in case Snape was hanging around. Walking into the lab to say goodbye to Snape, he was disappointed that he'd already gone. He washed the goblet up, left it on the counter, and groaned. This had got to work. The next day, Harry tempted Snape into the kitchen with the promise of jam scones.
"You have improved this room greatly."
He beamed. "Thanks. Creature did most of the work. He's off making blueberry jam. What's your favourite flavour?" Severus took a moment to answer. Clearly no one had asked him this before.
"I am partial to blackberry. They grew in abundance near my childhood home. My mother knew a handy spell to remove the bits."
"You will have to show me."
"I will."
They looked at each other for 3 seconds, before Harry felt a sudden impulse to say something to break out of the awkwardness. He took a deep breath.
Would you be willing to house sit for a couple of nights next week? I'm going away for a bit and would feel better if someone was here, you know, to water the plants, keep an eye on Creature and say hi to my owl.
He refused to cringe at his weak excuse.
Snape didn't look at him as he covered half a scone with a generous layer of cream.
To be clear, you want me to guard the dwelling that was so secure Dumbledore chose it to be the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix?
Harry grimaced.
I know it doesn't make much sense, but we don't know who put those enchantments up on the house, and after Dumbledore died, a lot of them will be broken. I realise it's inconvenient, so I'll pay 20 galleons. Or if you've got plans, perhaps you can suggest someone.
Snape's eyes narrowed.
Harry looked away in case he was using legitimacy.
I'll do it.
Phineas admired his gloves.
It would be unseemly of me to mention the rumours I have heard of your exploits across the continent. Too many people these days are such awful gossips.
Shut up, Phineas, Harry said loudly. He turned to Severus.
You can have the second room on the top floor. I'll tell Creature you're in charge.
He lowered his voice and leaned forwards conspiratorially. He gets upset if you don't eat every bite. It's as though you're offending some world-famous chef. Snape snorted. If you don't use the laundry basket on the landing, he can and will come through your wards to find your dirty socks.
Noted.
Come by whenever you're ready on Tuesday. Help yourself to anything in the cupboards.
Snape did not respond and regarded him inscrutably. If this doesn't work, I'll sign over everything I have to Snape and leave this country and never come back. He tried to be more positive. If this does work, I'll write to Ron and Hermione and tell them that Snape has given me life. One more day until the full moon. On Tuesday, Harry's insides were squirming uncomfortably. He tried to eat his tea, but it was like chewing carpet. He was both nervous and eager to test the wolfsbane tonight. Somnus sensed his anxiety and was dozing on his shoulder, face flopped on the top of Harry's head. He packed his precautionary potions anyway, even though he was utterly confident that the potion would be perfect. He summoned Creature.
Thanks for dinner. It was excellent. I'm going to be away for a night or two, and I've asked Professor Snape to come and stay. Please listen to everything he says.
Harry dropped his voice. He likes apple crumble, custard, vanilla ice cream, tea with 2 sugars, coffee with 3 sugars, steak and kidney pie, and cheesy pizza. At Creature's expression, he added, it's Italian. I'll buy a cookbook. Creature noticed Phineas rolling his eyes, and he glared at him. His owl gave a sleepy hoot. Oh, please feed Somnus too.
It is a privilege to serve the Honourable Headmaster Snape, he said, bowing. The man shares many tastes with Master Harry, he went on in an undertone. Creature will start on the pastry, oh yes. Perhaps he will be partial to Creature's Victoria sponge.
The morning after his transformation in the shack, his tendons burned in agony. He had spent dawn till 11 in unease, drifting between dreams of Severus mauled to death by a werewolf, his mother screaming in the blink of green light, his aunt locking him in the cupboard under the stairs, achieving a T in all his N-E-W-T's. He didn't even sit his N-E-W-T's. His dreams always seemed to be the most bizarre after a transformation, and he was glad that this time they were much more tolerable. Last month, he screamed himself awake in the nightmare where he faced Ron after accidentally biting Hermione. He returned home looking worse for wear, he knew. Thankfully, Snape didn't comment when he swept into the basement kitchen and saw Harry huddled over a coffee, Creature fretting nearby and cooking enormous quantities of sausages, and Phineas snoring softly in his frame. He simply topped up the cafetiere and unrolled the practical potioneer. Chapter 5. 26 days until the full moon. Harry sat on a workbench by the wall, swinging his legs and watching Snape. He was dipping unicorn-patterned wallpaper into a vast, bubbling cauldron with overlong tweezers.
Who's the wallpaper for?
The baby department of Harrods. Severus levitated over a washing line. Grey steam puffed out of the cauldron, and he dunked another sheet into it. I didn't know they had a wizarding department.
What you don't know would fill many books, he smirked.
The unicorns from the first sheet began to wake up. Teach me, then. Would you tutor me in the dark arts? Only for a fortnight or so. Severus levitated a second piece and turned around to raise his eyebrows.
The hero of light wishes to study the magic of darkness. Your father will roll in his grave. He detested any and all spells that could be conceived of as dark.
They can't be evil. You can do them, he said simply. Sirius once told me you knew more curses in first year than adults. Why? Is that true?
Severus shot warm air out the tip of his wand at the paper. That is a gross misrepresentation. You must learn curses in order to study counter-curses. I also had very limited access to learning materials as a child. I am confident if you had only charms and divination texts, you would become a veritable expert at both. Do a gentle tirreo on the wallpaper, please.
Oh. Harry leapt off the bench, mindful of avoiding brushing up against Severus. He drew his wand and cast the drying charm.
Oh, indeed.
Severus dropped more wallpaper into the potion and nudged it with his tweezers.
So you'll teach me. I need to be able to defend myself.
You are correct in your belief that although you conquered the Dark Lord, there are yet many that wish you harm. I do, however, recall that you were not willing to apply yourself to defence against the Dark Arts in your sixth year.
I'll work harder this time, but if I don't get something, don't treat me like I'm stupid. I'll try my best.
Severus lifted another sheet to the line.
Your best is all I ask, Potter. Don't even think about trying to pay me.
He grinned and started to dry the second piece. A tiny golden unicorn yawned.
You should call me Harry. Everyone does. Just Harry.
As you wish. Just Harry.
Harry felt inexplicably delighted. The pause grew awkward between them, as if they were on a date and should say something.
Were you ever nervous when dueling in the war?
Severus looked thoughtful. He took a minute before answering, and Harry felt a buzz now he had his undivided attention.
When dueling the Order, I feared for their safety. I do not feel afraid in a duel. I am competent and enjoy using magic to stretch my limits. By and large, my fears throughout the war regarded facing death before you had the knowledge you needed and your mortal peril. I was also entrusted to safeguard hundreds of children, whilst appearing to terrify and torture them into submission. Not a pleasant task, and I was very convincing. I can't step out into the wizarding world without terrifying all teenagers that look my way.
Weren't you exonerated by Dumbledore and Ron and Hermione? I'm sorry I didn't hang around to help. I was in a world of my own.
Severus inclined his head.
You sent me creature. I owe you both my life.
He washed his tools and hung them up.
As you know, Albus cannot sway the press or public sentiment, more so since he became a doddery old portrait, compounded by the incontrovertible truth that I murdered him.
Oh, right, he grimaced. Sorry. I don't really see you as a killer, so I find it hard to remember sometimes that he used the AK.
The AK indeed. On the world's most beloved headmaster, no less.
Did you ever think about leaving for the Muggle world?
I did. He decanted the potion into seven flasks. I was going to before you materialised. I am a half-blood, so not as clueless as some of our kind.
Harry interjected. I saw a bloke in a nightdress at the World Cup. Snape snorted in derision. Idiots.
He cleaned the cauldron and helped Harry dry the last sheet. It would pain me to abandon this world, because wizard is an integral part of my being. As ripped as my soul is, a wizard is just what I am.
He frowned. Your soul is not ripped.
Is that how it works? You were carrying out Professor Dumbledore's wishes. Or did you kill other people?
Snape stepped backwards and examined their handiwork.
Not directly, not unless it was unavoidable. I poisoned many with the draught of living death. He stopped drying the final sheet and joined Snape. The unicorns from the first sheet settled down for a nap.
Do you still feel bad about what happened with Professor Dumbledore, even though you could still talk to him for several months in your office?
Snape scowled.
I am not accustomed to snuffing out the life of those dearest to me.
He tilted his head at him.
Although I could speak with him, he is but a shadow of my mentor and friend. I do not pretend to fathom the magic behind the Hogwarts portraits, but Albus is dead. I killed him. It is an immutable fact. He is a ghost of his memories and personality traits.
Harry hummed.
Join me in the drawing room for a drink. He nodded and accompanied him to the other room. You know, sometimes I wish that there was a portrait of my parents, of Sirius. A way to talk to Cedric. Since Remus died and Fred, I've just accepted this gap where they used to be.
He gestured with gin and whiskey to Snape, who nodded at the latter.
Did Professor Dumbledore tell you about the Resurrection Stone?
His eyes widened, and he accepted the measure of whiskey.
He kicked off his shoes and swiveled to face Harry cross-legged on the sofa.
He did not. Tell me everything.
He had not had a captive audience about the horrors of the war since the week it took place. They savoured their drinks as he considered where to start. Talking about it wasn't nearly as painful as he feared, considering what Snape had divulged earlier today.
It's real. The Hallows are real.
Of course you know that, since you were murdered for a wand. But yeah, I had the stone the whole time. Professor Dumbledore used a snitch to hide it from me until I needed it. He got it to me in his will.
He sipped his whiskey.
Snape nodded in comprehension.
Flesh magic.
The one I caught during my first Quidditch match. Harry grinned at him, and as the alcohol entered his head, it seemed a splendid idea to poke him in the ribs. The game where you saved my life from that joke of a defence professor.
Indeed.
I don't know why, he had a lot of junk in his office, but he must have kept that snitch all these years just in case. Anyway, the stone was in a ring that belonged to Voldemort's relatives. He noted that he flinched at the name. And Dumbledore really wanted to see his sister, and that's why his hand got cursed. I was walking to my death. Did you know I died?
Snape looked baffled.
What? So, you know I had to die?
He wondered where to start.
Snape reached across him to get more whiskey and topped up their glasses.
I was not aware of the specifics beyond that. And believe me, I was more astonished to wake up and find myself awake, you alive, and the Dark Lord deceased. Before, I was dreading seeing you, and dreading not seeing you. My one saving grace was that I was not required to watch the soul leave your eyes. It would be watching Romeo drink his poison. Inevitable, foregone. The audience cannot interrupt the play.
He swallowed.
Tell me more about the stone, and your death.
I'm sorry you were alone in that. It must have been horrible, he said quietly.
Severus was peering into the depths of his glass.
He sipped more of his whiskey before continuing. So, I was on the way to my death, and I used the snitch with my lips to say that I was about to die. I got the stone out, and saw my parents, Sirius and Remus, not quite ghosts, but not alive either. They went with me, but no one else could see them.
At the hungry look in his eyes, Harry lied. I chucked it into the sea, along with that stupid wand. Dangerous stuff. You could go crazy. In first year, I'd visit my parents over and over in the Mirror of Erised, and Dumbledore told me it drove many people mad.
He nodded.
I can very well believe that. I requested that Albus keep it away from me. What happened next?
Mum, Dad, Remus and Sirius walked with me to Vol-you-know-who, and the Death Eaters in the forest. They were like Patronuses, I suppose. I let him use the killing curse. I woke up. Had a chat with Professor Dumbledore at King's Cross. There was a bit of you-know-who's soul. It was horrible. Then I had the choice to wake up or get on a train. At that point he was alive, and we had one other Horcrux to get rid of. I wasn't feeling suicidal quite yet.
He shrugged with a weak smile.
And so Professor Dumbledore is the angel that greets you when you perish. Severus shook his head slowly.
You've given me a lot to consider.
I know. Mental, isn't it? He knew what I'd been up to. Said I'd done a good job. So I guess we should make this life count.
He leaned forwards and clinked his glass to Snape's. We'd better. Cheers.
He knocked back the rest of his drink and got to his feet. See you tomorrow? Harry said hopefully.
You will,
he promised.